Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined on the phone by Joe Masato after the Thunder's 111-103 overtime win at Brooklyn, which, you know, a little bit of deja vu from last season when they had a last second win, but obviously two very different teams. And what a way to wrap up this four-game road trip.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great road trip for the Thunder and a great win tonight, and they won it in classic Thunder fashion this season. I mean, it was Chris Paul, 16 points in the fourth quarter. He was the hero again late. Like, he just continues to lead that category in, like, clutch time points and being really good in the fourth quarter. And it was another comeback. So it was just like, everything we've talked about all season, yeah, it like happened again tonight.
Yeah, 16 points in the fourth, another four in overtime, so 20 of his 28 in combined fourth quarter and overtime for Chris Paul. He just has another switch that he turns on at the end of close games.
It's wild. I mean, he, you know, is good for the first three quarters, but, you know, compared to what he does in the fourth quarter, it's a little underwhelming. And then he just kills teams in the fourth quarter, and he gets to that, you know, I know he can't do it on every possession, but sometimes I think, like, man, he gets to that spot in the paint where he just has that mid-range jumper, and he can do it over guys like Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan. Like, it doesn't matter who's there, and it's almost automatic in clutch time.
Yeah, he had three towards the end of regulation where two of them were from almost the exact same spot right around the free throw line, and then the third, it looked like he was coming back to that spot, and then he just hopped out to that right elbow, which he loves, and made all three of those mid-range jumpers. It's kind of ridiculous how efficient he is from the mid-range, and Billy Donovan talks about all the time, hey, I mean, analytics say it's not a great shot, but if you can make them and you aren't... Well, he talks mostly on defense about contesting those. With Chris Paul, it doesn't seem to really matter if they're contested. He'll take a fadeaway jumper from the right elbow, and it's almost guaranteed to go in.
It's like he's like a statistical anomaly. Like, yeah, it's not, it might not be a bad shot, but like when it's Chris Paul, it is a good shot because he's just perfected it throughout his years in the NBA. And when you see him in that spot, you think it's always going to go in until it doesn't. So, yeah, I mean, he, you know, this was a game that the Thunder, the fourth quarter offense really wasn't any good until late. They trailed by seven with just under 4 minutes left, looked like they were going to lose. And then you mentioned those back-to-back, almost identical jumpers from Chris Paul. The second one tied it. And then kind of a wild finish there at the end of that fourth quarter. Chris Paul, not so clutch, dribbles it off his leg, goes out of bounds. And then coming back, nets inbound the ball. Dennis Schroeder fouls before the inbound pass, which gives the Nets a free throw, and then Spencer Dinwiddie misses the free throw, misses a potential game winner at the buzzer, and then the Thunder just dominated in overtime.
Well, that free throw, too, was with 11 seconds on the clock, and if he makes it, suddenly the pressure's on the Thunder to get the ball back in those last seconds, and instead, the game's still tied, so all they have to do is defend to push it into overtime. And Dennis Schroeder did a really good job tracking back with Dinwiddie all the way until he could get Steven Adams coming over to help. He contests the jumper. It looked like Dinwiddie was looking to pass, but then decided against it and ends up missing that. I guess it's a technically, it was really a teardrop was how I'd classify that last shot that bounced off the rim.
Yeah, I mean, the free throw is huge because, you know, say he makes it, Nets get the ball back, Thunder has to foul because there's only 11 seconds left, and then if they make two there, the Thunder, or even if they make one, I mean, the Thunder are down either 2 or 3 points coming back to tie it. But then, you know, they played really good defense on him, and that was, other than Chris Paul, that was probably the story of the game. Just how they defended Spencer Dinwiddie, who was averaging 22.7 points per game. He was 6 of 21 tonight, 14 points, and missed all 6 of his 3-pointers.
Yeah, without KD and Kyrie Irving, he's really been their guy, and he didn't score at all in the first half. That's insane.
Yeah, it was insane, especially given the fact that, like, everyone scored in the first half. 10 Thunder players scored. 9 Nets scored. It's like 19 players scored in the first half, and one of them was not Spencer Dinwiddie, which was wild.
It was like him and Justin Patton, who didn't get in the game. Those were the two.
Yeah, I mean, both teams were playing on the second night of a back-to-back, so, like, a lot of guys got opportunities, but this was one where everyone zeroed in on Spencer Dinwiddie, and, like, you know, Shea did a really good job on him, so did Chris Paul, and then at the end, Dennis Schroeder did a good job as well.
Yeah, hard for anyone to win when your best offensive player is really neutralized like that. And the Nets put up a good fight to do it. I mean, this is a team that, yes, they're on the second night of a back. I mean, they're on the second night of the back to back, just like the Thunder. They've actually come from further.
Yeah.
To get back home and play this game. And so it's a team that, even on the road, the Thunder should have looked at as a team that they can beat. And they came in more shorthanded than we originally expected.
Yeah. Danilo Gallinari, who was out tonight, did not expect that. Out with a right calf contusion. So that's something new that popped up. I mean, he had missed 5 games in the last month as a result of that ankle injury. But this was a new one. But Darius Bazley slid into the starting lineup. Nerlens Noel was out again after spraining his ankle in Cleveland. And I thought, you know, we saw more Thunder players get into the game tonight. Deontay Burton and Abdul Nader did not play at Philadelphia, but both of them played big minutes tonight and did not shoot the ball particularly well, but, like, both had their moments. Like, Nader had a big 3 in the fourth quarter. Burton was energetic. I mean, he had a good block. He had a good rebound.
Yeah, he kind of seemed to be... I mean,
these guys are fighting for minutes.
He kind of seemed to be everywhere. But yeah, no, I think...
Which is what he has to do.
I think you summed it up perfectly. They weren't overpowering presences. I mean, Nader still shot 3 of 5, 1 of 2 from 3. But they came up in big spots.
Yeah. I mean, I probably shouldn't have grouped Nader into that. But, like, Burton was 1 of 6. Diallo was 1 of 4. Muscala was 2 of 8. Darius Bazley attempted 5 shots in the first 4 minutes.
Oh my gosh. And they were crazy. All threes. Like, no, I think all but one. He was just launching threes to start the game. He made one of them, missed at least 2 others, maybe 3 others. It was like left corner, right corner.
Man, I mean, left wing. Just like... He was shooting every time he got the ball, which, you know, we've talked about this before, but it's just funny to see, like, on a night when, you know, he starts, which is, you know, it has happened before, but it's a little rare. And then some of these other guys are getting in. Like, you see a bunch of weird things, and, like, tonight felt like that.
Yeah, when you put a bunch of young guys together, sometimes things go a little wonky.
But... Yeah. And then Chris Paul was like, no, I got this. Calm down, everyone.
Oh, okay, it's the fourth quarter. All right, here we go. We want to win? Okay, let's do this. Probably the biggest smile that he had all night, though, was the second jumper that he hit in overtime, where he took, it was just like a couple dribbles in from the 3-point line and... just a crazy pull up over Allen, and, you know, why not?
Well, I mean, why not? He's now up to 105. points in the clutch, which we've referenced this before. The Thunder have played more clutch time games than anyone, but he still leads that category. And by also, this is, yeah, by a lot. This is a crazy stat. The Thunder, they trailed going into the fourth quarter tonight, but this was the 11th time they've won after trailing going into the fourth quarter. No other team in the league has more than 6 wins while trailing going into the fourth quarter. So they've almost doubled up whoever's second in that stat.
It's crazy. They just won't lie down. And fourth overtime game, fourth overtime win.
Yeah.
3-1 record on this 4-game road trip. Pretty good.
Yeah, that was an awfully impressive road trip. And just to add to the notes, the Thunder sent this one out. They're 15-5 since Thanksgiving. That's the second best record in the NBA since Thanksgiving, behind only the Milwaukee Bucks, who are 17-3. So the Thunder are keeping fairly good company right now.
I guess we could have predicted this after the beginning of the season, because beginning of the season they were exceeding expectations in that they were playing good teams close. But I honestly thought, like, oh, well, teams are just underestimating them. That'll fall off. And it's been the exact opposite, where instead they've just continued to get better continuity, get to know each other more, feel more comfortable, and really start to groove. And they do a good job of feeding the hot hand. And like we saw tonight, a lot of times in the fourth quarter, that's Chris Paul. But he doesn't demand that, right? Like, he wouldn't be mad if, like, Shea started going off and he was passing to him. Like, it's a good group, all very much focused on ball movement and whoever's going, keeping him going.
I think that's a fantastic point that you just brought up a minute ago about what they did in the beginning of the season, like being more, like being closer to the truth than it seemed at the time. Like, it was like, oh, this is a scrappy bunch. They're hanging close with some of these really good teams, but they kept like losing those close games. Yeah. Like, I remember Chris Paul after one of them said, well, like, I think he was asked if he was having fun, and he was like, it would be a lot more fun if we would win some of these close games. And,
yeah.
And now it's like the Thunder can't lose close games.
He kept going back to, I mean, even now that they're winning them, and even before, he would talk about, like, yeah, it's great to have these learning experiences, but I'd rather learn while winning.
Well,
now they sure are.
Yeah. He spoke it into existence. I mean, they're 21-15, is that right, after tonight?
And 16?
16, yeah, 21-16. Which is fairly crazy to think about. I mean, we're like creeping ever so close to the halfway point right now.
Yeah, it's coming up way faster than every time that we write down on the podcast the, like, game 35 of 82. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Are we sure?
It's getting close. But yeah. Whew.
Another, I mean, we talked about the energy that came from guys like Deontay Burton on the Thunder, but a real energy booster from the other side was Jared Allen.
I have been waiting to talk about Jared Allen. I know Thunder fans were not happy to see what Jared Allen did tonight.
What he did to Mike Muscala.
What, that guy is a monster. Like, I have not seen every dunk this year, but I will happily nominate Jared Allen for Dunk of the Year for that dunk over Mike Muscala. Well, I'm not talking about 2020. Dunk of the season, whatever you want to call it. It was like one of those classic Blake Griffin dunks where you can't really tell if he like threw it in, if his hand even touched the rim. Like, he rose up, his right hand looked like it was above the square on the backboard, and Mike Muscala, I'm sorry, he just got dunked on.
Posterized for the ages.
And then Jared Allen's block of Terrence Ferguson. Yeah, Ferguson looked like he was trying to dunk all over Jared Allen, and Allen just met him at the rim and swatted it.
You could tell he got his whole hand on that. Like, you could hear it on the broadcast. Like, oh, yeah. That wasn't just like, oh, let me tip it out of the way. It's like, nope, this is mine now.
It's like the ball just stopped. Like, yeah. Terrence Ferguson was about to dunk that thing hard. And then there was just so much force meeting it the other way. It just, like, stopped in an instant. And those were two, like, wow plays tonight.
Yeah, he was really good. He really was one of the big reasons why the Nets didn't just fold when Dinwiddie wasn't scoring.
Yeah, he kept them in it, not only on the offensive end, but more so defensive wise. And it was, he was a total mismatch when Mike Muscala was in there. I mean, Muscala has to play with Nerlens Noel out, but you know, Adams is bigger than Jared Allen, at least weighs more and can push him around a little bit. Mike Muscala can't do that, and I thought the Nets did a good job of taking advantage of those minutes. There just, like, weren't enough of them to make that big of a difference.
Yeah. And then Prince also led the Nets with 21 points, got, like, 14 of those in the first quarter.
That was surreal.
It really was.
I was, like, looking down at the stats, and I'm like, he's 4 of 4 from three? The game just started.
Right? Those came in very rapid succession.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like the rise of the former Big 12 players, Torian Prince from Baylor, and then Jared Allen from Texas. But then, not, you know, they had, like, Prince really was quiet, I think, for the final three quarters. Like, how much did he finish with?
Finished with 21. So
he had,
compared to 14,
he had at least 14 in the first, yeah. Mm-hmm. So good night for him. But they needed, like, they just don't have that scoring punch when Dinwiddie's not getting going.
Yeah. So good job to the Thunder on defending him. Billy Donovan had another coach's challenge tonight. Sorry we didn't mention it last night when he actually won. He lost this one. It was a good challenge. It's harder to overturn foul calls are less likely to be overturned or just, like, have been overturned less often than out of bounds calls, which is what he won one on last night. And this one, Dennis Schroeder got knocked in the chin, and so he was essentially trying to get the call reversed so that instead of a foul on Schroeder, it was going the other way. Did not work, but he's still over 500 in coaches' challenges, which is above the league average, so he's been picking his spots well.
Yeah, he's like, you know, there haven't been as... I kind of thought all coaches would basically use their one challenge a game, like a use it or lose it type situation. But Billy sort of picked his spots, and he hasn't been smart with them. And I thought, you know, tonight's could have gone either way. Those, like you said, the foul calls are hard to overturn. Schroeder did get hit in the chin, but they said that he kind of got into, what was it, Dinwiddie that was driving against him?
I can't remember off the top of my
head. I think it was Dinwiddie, one of the Brooklyn guards. But they said Schroeder sort of got into his body before that contact was made with his chin. But Billy says that when he challenges, he, you know, if one of his objectives is to, like, take points off the board, and if that call's overturned, you stop the Nets from going to the free throw line. So it made sense in the moment to challenge it.
Yeah, it's a funky thing. I mean, I think you have to be kind of conservative with when you use them, just because you don't, it's not like football. You don't get it back if you win. So,
yeah.
You get your timeout back, but not the challenge. Also, if you lose, you lose a timeout. Like, it's all, it's a tough balancing act there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting at the so the NBA releases like all of the challenges and the results and stuff, so you can go back and look it up. But maybe there's a database that exists that I need to find. But it'll be an interesting exercise at the end of the year to see like where Billy ranked percentage-wise on successful challenge calls.
Yeah, compared to other coaches. I mean, he's got to be a. The last I looked, I think overall it was in the 40s, and he's 6-5 right now.
So he's better than average.
Yeah.
Well, way to go, Billy.
Right. Well, coming up.
Nothing on TLC.
Oh my gosh, I know. I'm sorry. Great to see him. He wasn't really that notable.
I didn't know.
Sorry.
I did
Sorry,
not notice
Tim.
anything either. I just, since we spent so much time on him the
I
last
know.
podcast, I thought we had to bring him up.
He played 15 minutes, just one of three from the field.
I thought you were just going to say he played, which is about all of the
He
analysis
played.
that I could provide.
Full stop. It's
But
all out
yeah,
there.
Westbrook. Westbrook's coming back to Oklahoma City, for those who
Westbrook's
haven't
coming
heard.
to town. Yeah. I mean, it should be a nice welcome home. I'm assuming that he's gonna get a very warm welcome from fans. I mean, if Paul George is gonna get as warm a welcome as he got when he came back, can't imagine how enthusiastic fans are going to be when they see a guy who both gave so much of himself to the city for over a decade and left on good terms. Not that Paul left on bad terms, he just kind of he started the ball rolling for Russell to leave. So, and Stuart
Yeah, I
is very
mean,
mad about this. Do you hear him? Stu, it's fine, buddy.
I
It's a new
Stuart's
era. It's a new era, Stu. They're moving on. He's just sitting here growling.
I'm gonna say it's like it's gonna be overwhelmingly positive. Like one of I'm struggling to think of another return that would could possibly even rival it. Not for the Thunder, but just across the league. Like I would guess the standing ovation is going to last multiple minutes and people are just gonna lose their minds. That's my prediction.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see. Russ was asked about it the other day, but kept his comments pretty short and essentially was like, said things that he's already said before, like, I grew up in Oklahoma City, and then was like, I'm gonna talk about it after the game.
Which was hilarious to me. Again, I never covered Russell Westbrook, but when he was like, what he was asked what his fondest memories of Oklahoma City were, and he was like, I don't want to talk about it now. I'll talk about it after the game. So I'll be very interested to see how much he wants to talk after the game. Maybe he will, but I mean, I know he'll talk, but as far as like really being reflective.
I think he'll expand. I mean, he was pretty good post game at Houston, and I think he kept coming back to like, this was interesting, this was cool, but like, it's going to be something entirely different when I go back to the actual city. Also, it's not even like he's playing an entire team of his former teammates. It's like
That's right.
he's playing a handful of his former teammates.
Yeah, I don't think it has, nearly as much to do with that as just being in the arena again.
Right. Right. Which is why the Thunder being in Houston wasn't quite as big of a deal for him as coming home, essentially, to his second home, first home,
Yeah.
tied for home.
And I will plug all of our stories. We've already had some really good columns up about Westbrook's return. We're working on some stuff that will be out on Thursday and more stuff tomorrow. So yeah, give it all a read.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right. Well, with that, Stuart, too many parting words?
Well said, Stuart.
Killing it. He just sniffed the microphone for a little bit. All right. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, subscribe, share it with your friends, your enemies, your neighbors, your loved ones, your pets, so that they can, you know, get excited about Stuart representing dogs on this pod. And we will see you on whatever day of the week the 9th is.
Thursday.
After the Houston game.